get ready.
Man, I don't ever want to be so woke that me and the KKK are out here agreeing on the same shit. Before they were killing people to keep us from voting, now we talk ourselves out of the shit.
For real talk.
Before you get out here live wrong talking about minimum wages and starter jobs, educate yourself on why the minimum wage was created in the first damn place.
All the time.
You shouldn't be the same person you was 10 years ago. You should be growing towards a better you every day. And the only ones who will be threatened by that are the ones who refuse to grow and are scared their ass gonna get left behind.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 255 of The Report. I am your host, Mr. Span, and right now we rocking out to some 2 Chainz. If the feds watching, rock out with your boy. Yes, indeed, y'all. It is Saturday evening here in Michigan. It's been a nice day, man. I went out, got my car washed, got my hair cut, the whole shebang, man. Out here looking nice and glossy. Nice and glossy. I ain't got no gloss on my lips or nothing like that, but y'all know what I'm talking about, man. I got the Armor All on the tires, man. You can't get no car wash and not have the Armor All on your tires, man. It's like getting out of the bathtub and not putting on no lotion. Your tires looking ashy than a motherfucker, man. And we can't be out here like that, man. You gotta get the sheen on the bald head too, man. You can't be out here with the ashy bald head. Gotta get some, gotta get some grease up there, man. Put some grease up there. But yeah, man, let me turn this shit off. Yes, indeed, man. Episode 255 of the Spirit Report Podcast. And of course, like I said, I am your host, Mr. Span. Thank you for everybody who's watching right now. And for everybody who's going to be watching later. And for everybody who's going to download and listen to this later. Yo, man, I was supposed to do this Thursday. And yo, this is busy season for your man, Span, man. You know, the summertime is where we really just like kind of humping and shit. And, you know, we was humping at the job, man, like humping really motherfucking good. So, you know, so, I mean, I complain when I'm working. You know, I do a lot of complaining about work and whatnot, man, because, you know, sometimes when your man Span go to work, man, he come home, he tired, don't really feel like doing nothing. I just want to wash my ass, sit on my couch, grab a beer, watch a little bit of TV, man. You know, got to get some, you know, love at the lockup in my life. Got to get some black ink in my life. Got to have, you know, the ratchetness that I do like to watch. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, Thursday, man, like, I ended up just not getting off work on time, man. Like, I had no real time to, like, kind of get, you know, set up in between work and doing this, so I had to push this back to this Thursday evening, man. But yo, oh shit, it gives me time to get the shit together, right? Because I'm one of the things about having to push the show back is some more news happened, and I'd have been pissed because I'm like, man, I gotta wait a week to talk about that shit, and I just might push the shows back to like Saturday, like mornings or something. Like if I can get like the shows like Saturday mornings or early afternoon or something like that, that might be a little bit more feasible for these summer months for me to get out, get these shows out in a more what we should say a consistent basis, right? So yeah, man, that's what's been going on. But of course, I gotta do this before I go on. I gotta let you guys know how to get in touch with us over here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voices be heard. Go ahead and hit us up at our hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave us those voicemail messages. Of course, I'll replay them on the show and respond in kind. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Go ahead and leave those emails, and those emails will get read here live on the show. And you can also, we'll read them live on the show and we'll reply to those emails here live on the show as well. I got some new shit going on here with this Be Live stuff, and I'm a little confused with this new layout, but I'm gonna make it happen. Also, follow your man Span on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your mans throughout the week. Leave us an iTunes and or Stitcher review, 5 stars, preferably. Those iTunes reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. You can leave something else, but we're not going to read those. The 5-star reviews are the ones that we really recognize. We're kind of blind to anything else. So the 5-star reviews, man, go ahead and leave those. We really do appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. It helps the show grow. It doesn't cost you anything, man. There's 2 minutes of your time to go ahead and say, hey, I like this and you should probably listen. So we really do appreciate everybody who does that. Also, you can go to Patreon and become a TSRPN Patreon patron. And this allows for us to kind of move this show off of Facebook and go on and I really want to go back to to Crowdcast. Like if we can move the show over to Crowdcast and not have to deal with some of the censorship that we've been dealing with over here at Facebook, it would be really good if we could do that. And for those of you who have signed up for to become Patreon patrons of the Span Report Podcast, we really do appreciate you guys, and you do get a shout out on the show. And depending on which level of support that you give us here, there's some gifts in it for you as well, man. So we really do appreciate everybody who signs up to become a TSRP and Patreon patron, man. Real talk, it really does help us immensely. Also, for everything Span Report related, you can go to www.thespanreport.com. You can go there. You can watch. You can watch replays of the show. You can vote in the polls. You can leave comments on the web on the episodes, and you can also hit up our store. You can get yourself like a T-shirt, like the one that I got on right now. We got some Beer Chicken merch in there. We got some Baywatch podcast merch in there. We're thinking of some new ideas to put on some more shirts and some more coffee mugs and some more sports bottles and everything else that we got over at the TeePublic store. You can go from the website to our TeePublic store at www.teepublic.com/user/TSRPN, or you can just go to the website and it'll just like, yo, take me to the store, and boom, you ain't got to do none of that, right? So yeah, man, that is how you get in touch with us over here at the Span Report Podcast, man. Real talk. But yo, let me go ahead and take that down. And yeah, it's been busy. Like I said, it's been busy at the job, man. Your man Span yesterday, man. You know, I set it up, man, so we can get some work in and like get some extra bread. You know what I'm saying? Because it's those summer months. You got trips coming up and whatnot. You got bills that need to be paid still. And so, yo, you really want to, like, if you can get the extra bread, you should try to get the extra bread. And so I set up some work so that I can get some extra bread. And yo, man, kind of wish I hadn't. I was at work yesterday, and my body was hurting, my feet was hurting, my knees was hurting. I hadn't sat down from 8 o'clock in the morning till about 5:50, almost 6:30 in the morning, 6:30 in the afternoon. Your man Span was just constantly moving, man, just constantly moving. I was on it. I was on my grind, man, like grinding. And I crashed last night. I knew it was gonna happen. They were just like, yo, I'm trying to watch TV, and it was happening. This is what it was. But other than that, man, that's pretty much what it's been for your man Span this week, man. Trying to pay attention to the news. And also just, just working, grinding, man. Trying to get through these summer months, get this bread stacked up to kind of, you know, well, not that I got to hold a nigga over, but still, you know, just try to get the bread stacked up. And so, yeah, man, it's been busy. I'll just say that. It's been busy for your man Span at the job. But before we get into the show, man, I do want to shout out Aaron B. Aaron B is a new Patreon patron here at the Span Report Podcast. We really do appreciate you over here, brother. Thank you so much for your contribution, and your gift will be on the way. You just got to let me know what you want, right? You got to let me know what you want, but your gift will be on the way. We really do appreciate your contribution to the Span Report Podcast Network. You are a TSRPN Podcast patron, and we thank you. We thank you sincerely, man. Real talk. But yeah, man, I had to do that. And now it's time for us to get into the show in the news. All right. Now, our first story here in the news has to deal with the sex trafficker, a sex trafficker of major proportions, a sex trafficker who has connections to the labor secretary, connections to Donald Trump, connections to a lot of different politicians, both Democrat and Republican. Right. But he's finally been indicted, and, you know, he's a billionaire. So he's got a lot of influence, and he's got a lot of friends. So we'll see exactly what happens to him, but we're going to read this story here. This comes out of businessinsider.com. It says that a stunning new report details that Trump's labor secretary's role in a plea for a billionaire sex abuser. So this is how this kind of works, right? How they've tied this together is that, like, basically the dude who was currently the labor secretary in the United States cut a deal as a prosecutor for this dude who was a friend of Donald Trump. To keep him from having to serve any jail time, I believe it was. We're going to read the story. Like I said, this comes out of businessinsider.com. It says a new Miami Herald report gives stunning details about how President Trump's labor secretary went to great lengths to help downplay billionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein's sex crimes when he was a U.S. attorney for Southern Florida. According to the report, local and federal investigators had gathered enough evidence to put Epstein away for life in 2007 when then U.S. attorney Alexander Acosta met with one of Epstein's lawyer, Jay Lefkowitz. Acosta and Lefkowitz were former colleagues from their time at the top-ranked law firm Kirkland & Ellis. At the meeting, the two reportedly hammered out a deal that would see Epstein serve just 13 months in a private cell block at a county jail instead of federal prison. Okay, so he did serve jail time. Government documents obtained by the Herald show that in exchange for a lowered sentence, Epstein provided unspecified information on federal investigations. It's unclear what kind of information Epstein provided to the feds, but his case came to light during the 2008 global financial collapse. He went on to be a key witness in the criminal prosecution of two prominent executives with Bear Stearns who were accused of corporate securities fraud. Epstein, whose wealth is often estimated in the billions, was one of the largest investors in the hedge fund and the two executives managed. The two executives were later acquitted. It's unclear if Epstein's role testifying against the two executives was part of his plea deal. While Epstein had to register as a sex offender and pay restitution to the dozens of victims that investigators identified, he only agreed to plead guilty to two prostitution charges. The deal also kept the full extent of Epstein's charges largely secret from the public, and emails obtained by the Herald showed that the prosecutors worked with his defense team to push the case through Miami court so that the victims, who were mostly located in Palm Beach, wouldn't know about his sentencing and try to get the agreement thrown out. So, basically what they're laying out is that Jeffrey Epstein got a sweetheart deal from the then district attorney, U.S. attorney, what's this dude's name? I just read this dude's name. Acosta. He got a sweetheart deal from him because his lawyers were chummy. They used to work for the same law firm. And he also violated the law by concealing the fact that this dude was going to be let out of prison early and not letting the victims know that this guy was going to be let out of jail early. And I know, like, it's one of those things where it's like how the powerful kind of look out for the powerful. You know what I'm saying? Like, and there are pictures that they've got Donald Trump with Jeffrey Epstein, and you know, folks are talking about whether or not, you know, this is the birds of a feather flock together sort of thing. I do find it funny that, like, yo, here's a guy that is involved in sex trafficking, and you got Donald Trump who has bragged on tape to, you know, about grabbing women by the pussies and everything else, and they let you do it, and not only that, Donald Trump himself has over 20 accusers of sexual assault on him, and it's interesting how little attention. The cases against Donald Trump how little attention the press has been paying to the amount of accusations that have been leveled against Donald Trump of this nature, right? one of the things I saw a few weeks ago was D.L. Hughley was on his show, and he was talking about, he was actually laying this at the feet of the Me Too movement. And this is one of the things that, like, I disagree with him on, because as astute as he is on race issues, when it comes to sexual assault and things of this nature, or when it comes to anything other than race, really, D.L. Hughley is quite lacking. And he laid this at the feet of the Me Too movement, because the Me Too movement hadn't, to his liking, brought enough attention to the fact that Donald Trump has been accused of rape or sexual assault of over 20 women, right? And one of the things I think is interesting is that I think for a large degree, not that I'm giving these anybody any excuses, but I think to a large degree what's happening with that is that right now we have criminal investigations going on in Congress, mostly in the House of Representatives. They're trying to get his tax records. They're trying to, you know, see if he's benefiting from the presidency, from foreign governments. They're trying to see whether or not, they're trying to have some consequences meted out for the things that were unveiled in the Mueller report. And what we found is that by federal guidelines, that the president of the United States cannot be indicted while he's in the office, right? And what I think is happening is that a lot of people are just like, well, shit, what difference does it make if we can't do anything to this guy right now? He can't be indicted while sitting president. And then you got the Democratic, you know, caucus right now led by Nancy Pelosi, who's not really pursuing impeachment right now, because mostly she's on, you know, Nancy Pelosi is of the mind of like, well, we can impeach him, but it really doesn't mean a goddamn thing if the Senate doesn't convict him and remove him from office. And then you got to wonder about, well, if we do convict him and remove him from office, do we set ourselves for the fucked up part and Mike Pence becoming president of the United States and getting shit done on a more traditional level? But yo, he's doing it like he's doing the same shit that Donald Trump would be doing it in, but in a more genteel way, right? It just comes across better. It's like it goes down smooth because he's much more of a polished politician, right? So the fact that these guys are connected in some way, many people are really making that like that strong connection that like, yo, if he was fucking around with him and he was doing all this, Donald Trump had to know. And truth be told, as much as I don't fuck with Donald Trump, we don't really know if that's, you know, the case. We don't. And so and it's also interesting, too, that Donald Trump's labor secretary was also involved with this guy in some way. I mean, again, this guy was a billionaire and he's got a lot of different friends. He's got a lot of different associates. This can fall on both sides of the political spectrum, whether you be Democrat or Republican. Jeffrey Epstein is one of those people who was able to operate with impunity for years. And finally, the feds have come and got him. And, you know, I low key wonder whether or not the feds came and got him, only because they knew that they were going to be doing this next, right? So, R. Kelly. R. Kelly is in the news this week, and I'll be goddamn if he ain't in the news because of some goddamn sex trafficking and child pornography charges. All right, so we got video attached to this, so let me go ahead and pull this up. And I want you guys to watch this right along with me. This comes from CBSnews.com. Hold on.
Foot singer R. Kelly, who is.
Okay, so let me pull this up so you guys can watch right along with your boy. Let's do this here. And here we go.
Back in custody, this time facing federal sex crimes charges. NYPD detectives and Homeland Security agents arrested Kelly last night in Chicago. He was indicted earlier in the day by two federal courts, the Northern District of Illinois, based in Chicago, and the Eastern District of New York, based in Brooklyn.
The 13-count indictment accuses Kelly of charges related to child pornography, enticement of a minor, and obstruction of justice. And this is on top of the state charges he already faces. CTM national correspondent Jerika Duncan has been covering the allegations of abuse by R. Kelly, which he strongly denies, we should point out. Jerika, what else do we know?
Well, this is the first time that R. Kelly is facing federal charges. We heard that this was coming. It was really a matter of when. Federal prosecutors in New York are expected to announce charges as early as today, which our sources say could involve sex trafficking.
For the second time this year, R&B singer R. Kelly was arrested in Chicago on sex crime charges. Federal agents took the three-time Grammy winner into custody. Sources say it happened while he was walking his dog in front of his Trump Tower apartment Thursday night.
For more charges, even if you're innocent.
Kelly's crisis manager, Daryl Johnson, says the singer's team was expecting federal charges, and they are ready to fight them.
Has a lot of fans.
Okay, so this is his crisis manager. Never trust a motherfucker that shaves off his mustache but leaves the beard. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to shave off the mustache, shave off the beard too. Like that little tuft at the bottom, man, the shit ain't looking good, man. You shaved off your mustache and left the beard, and it leaves your, we already know your judgment is suspect. When you decide you're going to take on a case defending R. Kelly to the public of all of this shit, and then you look at your face and you be like, man, I'm, you know what? Yeah, shave off the mustache too. Shave off the mustache too. Yeah, your judgment is kind of off. Nobody should ever hire this guy again.
And they're wishing him the best. And, you know, that best outcome is for him to be out. And that's what we all hope.
Kelly had already been charged with a number of sex-related crimes this year.
The new indictment alleges additional counts.
Just 6 weeks ago, he pleaded not guilty to 11 of those charges in Chicago, four of which carry up to 30 years in prison each, if convicted. In an explosive interview with Gayle King in March, Kelly insisted he has done nothing wrong and denied allegations he abused women.
Well, how stupid would it be for R. Kelly, with all I've been through in my way past...
That's the way past.
...to hold somebody... let alone 4, 5, 6, 50, you said. Why, how stupid would I be to do that? This camera on me?
Yes.
That's stupid. Use your common sense.
The singer has denied allegations of sexual misconduct for decades and was acquitted on state child pornography charges in 2008.
R. Kelly has pleaded not guilty to all previous charges against him. It's unclear whether these new federal charges, like the obstruction of justice charge, are related to the previous ones. We don't know yet when Kelly will appear before a judge next. Anthony?
Jerika.
All right. So, again, like I said, these are federal charges. This isn't just the state stuff now, right? He's dealing with fair time. And when you're dealing with fair time, more often than not, you're going to be, you're going to do most of that time when you're dealing with the feds, right? And so one of the things that I think is very interesting was the fact that, like I said, Jeffrey Epstein was grabbed up, snatched up, and, you know, he's charged, and he had been charged before. He had been in jail before for doing this sort of shit, but, like, again, they went real light on him, but they snatched him up again. And one of the things I thought was, very interesting about this was the fact that Jeffrey Epstein was arrested, and it was a lot of chatter about the fact that, like, yo, Jeffrey Epstein in the news, sex trafficking, you know, underage girls, this, that, and the other. And you didn't really hear a whole lot of chatter about, you know, why they always fucking with, like, the black people, man, like R. Kelly and Bill Cosby is the face of this stuff. Like Jeffrey Epstein and Harvey Weinstein and fucking Roman Polanski, like, we don't know about what these guys have done. And some of these guys are in trouble, like Harvey Weinstein going to trial, and Roman Polanski is on the run, can't come back to the United States, and all these sorts of things. It kind of leaves that excuse of black men being the face of this. It kind of lays waste to that a little bit, right? Interestingly enough, I want us to pray for our P-Hive friends and family. I mean, I kind of want to pray for them. Because it's one of those things, man, where, like, you know that they're having a real tough time. And many of them have not really reconciled the fact that, like, they've been openly and actively and wholeheartedly supporting a sex trafficking pedophile for the better part of damn near 25 years. Right. And to a certain degree, some of them won't even acknowledge this. They're like, man, shit, them girls knew what they was doing. Like, yeah, but so did he. Yeah, man, R. Kelly. I mean, I don't really like, let me stop lying. I do like tap dancing on this nigga. Like, I just do. Because, like, it's just one of those things, man, where, like, you see the amount of defense that people give somebody like this, and you be like, man, I can't see you. And, like, the interesting thing about this R. Kelly shit is that the amount of defense that R. Kelly gets within our community is, it also kind of amounts to the same sort of defense that Donald Trump gets from, racist people who voted for him. You know what I'm saying? No matter what this motherfucker does, there's always something to excuse away why he did what he did. And when it comes to R. Kelly, like, there's a certain segment of the population, no matter what this fuck ass dude does, there's a contingent of folks who are just like, nah, fuck whatever it is y'all talking about concerning what he did. I don't care. The music jamming, yada, yada, yada. I don't know, man. I don't know. He just might find himself stepping in the name of love in jail, federal time. So, yeah, that is in the news, man. That is in the news. Another story that is in the news that we've got here is Minnesotans, man. So, drug prices all over the United States are kind of, like, fucked up. They really goddamn high. And for whatever, like, some people in Minnesota figured out that they could go over to Canada and they can get them their drugs at a much more reputable or much more affordable cost. So we're going to get the story here. There's a news story attached to it. So let's see if we can pull that video up. Let's do that right now. Here we go. All right. Let's go to, where is it? I know it. There it is. Boom. Let's see. Bam.
Well, a group of diabetics from Minnesota recently returned from a long road trip to Canada to buy cheaper insulin. With rising costs of the life-saving drug here in the U.S., about a dozen or so people boarded a bus and headed north.
Fox 9's Christina Palladino live in our newsroom. Christina, for many on this journey, this supply will get them through about the next few months, right?
That's right. You are allowed to purchase a 3-month supply for personal use in Canada without a prescription, and it's considerably less money than here in Minnesota. Families on the trip say they're having to choose between paying the mortgage or buying insulin to keep them alive.
This one was purchased in Canada for $34. This one in the United States for $380.
Deb Souther shows us the same two vials of insulin she needs to live. One was purchased on a recent trip to Canada. The other is what she's allowed to buy with her insurance each month. The difference? A $346 price tag.
That don't make no motherfucking sense. None whatsoever. We are getting gouged here in America. But as much as they like to brag about how well the economy is, how low the unemployment numbers are, what difference does it make if the people can't afford the medicine that they need to live? What difference does it make if they can't afford the roof over their head? What difference does it make if they can't afford the food to sustain themselves? Like, the prices of these drugs are astronomical, and to a large degree, nothing really has been done about this. Nothing. Okay, there we go.
Here in the United States, people are having to choose between, do I pay my rent, or do I buy my insulin?
Deb was one of about a dozen people who drove hours across the border last week to London, Ontario, about 2 hours west of Toronto, to pick up a 3-month supply of insulin for herself. Her husband recently changed jobs, and the cost of insulin with their new insurance sets them back nearly $1,000 a month.
If I'm a few hours without insulin, I start to feel very sick. If I went a few days without insulin, I would die.
It's unbelievable that we can just go across the border and get the insulin for this price, 3 months supply, and save thousands and thousands of dollars.
The increase in the price of insulin has been dramatically on the rise. In the U.S., a prescription is needed to buy insulin, and a diabetic is only allowed a certain amount a month, leading many to ration it out. Minnesota Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith have been working on legislation to fix the issue. Smith recently introduced a bill that would set up emergency access in all 50 states.
This can't be a long-term solution of, let's just go to Canada, let's just go to Mexico. That's not feasible. We need change here in our own country. We should not be relying on another country to keep us alive.
We're number one. Not really. not really. The fact that they even had to travel that far to go get drugs, drugs needed for them to live, is absolutely fucking deplorable. That's crazy. That's crazy. And this actually would have been in the Proud to Be in America segment, but yo, man, like I'm not proud of this shit whatsoever. And I know Proud to Be American is more so like ironic and whatever, but yeah, that's just fucking crazy. Also, man, we got another story here in the news. So in, you know, the 4th of July has come and gone, and I know they made a lot of noise about whether or not Donald Trump would be politicizing the 4th of July with his new parade. He wanted military flyovers. He wanted tanks on the streets. He wanted, you know, the whole, he said it was like inspired by the Bastille parade in France or whatever, where he had the whole military thing going on or whatnot. He wanted that for himself, right? In America, we don't necessarily do that. As far as the tradition behind it, I don't really know. But, you know, he wanted some shit like that, like to show himself as like a world leader with massive military might, right? But apparently, because he wanted to do that, Donald Trump bankrupted the city of Washington, D.C. of their security fund for the rest of the goddamn year. All right, so we're reading this story here. This comes out of, hold on just a second. As my wife is texting, goddamn babe. Hold on a second. Hold on, people. Let me let my wife know that I'm recording right now. Oh, man. Yeah, okay, baby. All right, so let's get back to this. Where is it? I don't have it. Well, I'll be damned. I don't have it. However, I do have this story, and it's also Trump related. So apparently, Sebastian Gorka and CNN's Brian Karam trade insults at a Donald Trump Rose Garden event. All right, so they said he didn't promise you a brawl, but if the crowd had its way, it would have had one today. Right-wing talk show host Sebastian Gorka called out CNN political analyst Brian Karam after Donald Trump's White House event, and the two traded near nose-to-nose insults before decorum, or at least sanity, prevailed. Video uploaded to social media today shows the two men yelling at each other as a sizable audience watched and cell phone cameras rolled. Check out some of the video below. Let's go ahead and check out some of this video. Do I need to pull this up for y'all to watch this with me? I probably do. Let's go ahead and pull that up. What they talking about here? All right. Is that a video? No, that's not a video. It's a screen capture. Oh, there's the damn woman again. Let's check this out.
Sad.
No, I'm just standing alone. This is a group of people that are eager for demonic possession.
And you're a journalist, right?
That's right.
Hey, come on over here and talk to me, brother. We can go outside and have a long conversation.
Oh, man, he hit him with it. Come over here and talk to me, brother. Come on close. Come on close. That's one of those. Come on, boy. Come on. You're going to walk over, but you're limping back. You're walking over, but you're limping back.
Out in the White House. I'm in the Rose Garden. You're threatening me. In the Rose Garden.
Get him.
You are a punk. You're not a journalist. You're a punk.
Go home.
Oh.
Journalist.
Go home. Hey, Gorka, get a job.
Hey, just for the record, he'd kick your punk ass.
Oh, this is happening in the Rose Garden, though. Like, so they totally classing it up, y'all. They are totally classing it up at the Rose Garden, man. Check. Oh, there's more videos, so let's go ahead and see.
Threatening me in the Rose Garden. You are a punk. You're not a journalist. You're a punk.
Dr. Gorka, go home.
Should the president be allowed to block people on Twitter?
You should not get talking journalists like this.
Just for the record, he'd kick your punk ass.
Oh, my God.
This is over. Be real journalists.
Oh, there's that Joy Villa shit. Okay, so here's the other thing, too, that's really kind of weird. Everybody else here is pretty much dressed kind of conservatively. I mean, they got on their, like, the shirt and ties or whatever and the dresses and whatnot. She's the only one out there with this bright red, white, and blue-ass dress on with the afro or whatever. Like, she's more known for her fandom of Donald Trump than anything else. Like, she said she's, we learned who Joy Villa was. because she showed up at the Grammys with a Make America Great Again dress on. This is that lady. She showed up there with that Make America Great Again dress on, and she got more attention for that dress and for her association with Donald Trump than any motherfucking music she's ever put out ever. Like, I remember I saw her in another video. It was on YouTube or something. I think it was one of those, you know, where they pit two different kinds of people against each other and they ask them questions and they have a discussion. And she said she was Grammy nominated and everybody was looking at her like, for what though? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's her. But like, yo, this is what they're doing in the motherfucking White House at the Rose Garden, man. They having fucking fights at the Rose Garden, man. But yeah, man, that has been the news. All right, but y'all know what time it is.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right, now our first story here on Blue Blazes is, it comes out of Georgia, man. Apparently, there was some shit going on in Georgia where some monies fell out of an armored truck. Monies fell out of the armored truck, and everybody on the road got out, got the monies. And apparently, one dude decided he was going to take that money and give it back to the police. All right, we're going to get this story here. This comes out of WSBTV.com. It says in DeKalb County, you're driving along a busy interstate when all of a sudden you see money flying all over the road. What would you do? The scenario played out on along a stretch of I-285 Tuesday evening. One of WSB Radio's traffic troopers called the newsroom to tell us what he was seeing. 285 westbound near Ashford Dunwoody Road. I saw a bunch of paper floating around in the road and everybody pulling over on the shoulder. And as I got closer, I noticed it was just all cash. Indeed, there was cash in the air. Vehicles immediately started stopping, collecting the money. Sergeant Robert Parsons with Dunwoody Police tells WSB Radio, an armored car was traveling on 285 West when the side door came open and an unknown amount of money flew out onto the highway. Parsons said it was a substantial amount of cash. Amazingly, no crashes or injuries from the impromptu cash grab. It's not what you see every day, says Parsons. Well, I've seen it in the movies. It's very bizarre that this happens. This is one of the first I could think of. Parsons said that the drivers who took money will have to return it. He said that the police will likely look at the video, but most of the cars were gone when officers arrived. So, interestingly enough, I saw people talking about this on social media. I saw one guy actually return that money to, he returned like $2,500 to the police department or whatever. That nigga is not to be trusted. this is why stuff like this will never happen to me. As a matter of fact, goddamn it, there's video with this here too. So let me go ahead and pull this video up. Let's watch this. Let's see what the hell happened on I-285. Let's see how this cash grab actually unfolded. And here we go. As soon as I can get this boy to load back up. There we go. Come on, come on, come on. Let's act like we're trying to podcast in that computer. Thank you so much. All right.
Talking about, we just can't get enough ground.
And now Dunwoody police hope more people will do the right thing and return some of the
$175,000. Man, them niggas are scooping and I ain't mad.
Of an armored truck, not from a sky or some fantasy tree. It's someone else's money. Someone else did hand over the cash just in the last 20 minutes. Channel 2's Dave Huddleston talked with police about what could happen if you don't return the money.
I had to turn it. I have to turn it.
No, you didn't.
We were there when Rendell Lewis returned $2,150 to Dunwoody police.
To my mom, my dad.
Okay. This is the face of a nigga that can't be trusted. I'm sorry. This is the face of a nigga that cannot be trusted. Nope. I know y'all calling this nigga a good Samaritan and everything else, but nigga, 20... Nigga, I ain't... No.
They really trained me well.
Officers say Lewis and dozens of others stopped on the perimeter near Ashford-Dunwoody Road when money flew out of an armored truck Tuesday night.
We had vehicles swerving off the road. We had pedestrians running around in the middle of the interstate.
You sure as
hell did. Sergeant Parsons says the drivers of that interstate just kept driving down the perimeter. They didn't even know they had lost some of their money until another driver told them. I talked with another witness who said she didn't take any money but recorded this video of people grabbing cash off I-285.
See, this is another thing too, man. Niggas be telling on themselves with the social media, man. Everybody want to record themselves doing some shit, recording somebody else doing some shit. Man, record the real shit. Record the police fucking with people, you know what I'm saying? How you going to record this blessing? How you going to try to, like, report people for the blessings? These blessings have been bestowed upon these folks. Like, why would you do that? Now you got license plates, numbers, and shit. You got, like, video cameras of the people who's out here going to get their blessings. You know, and the cops are trying to take these blessings away. Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
Insane. Like, it made no sense. I thought, okay, maybe it's a movie set, but I don't see, like...
And she sounds white, too. I'm just saying.
Cameras, I don't see police, you know, barricading. And then I thought, well, maybe... I thought armored truck, but I never saw it.
Sergeant Parsons is encouraging others who grab some of the cash to return it before police come looking for you.
Because if we do have to do that, you probably will be charged.
Charged with theft by taking. I was right there and took this picture when James Gregory also returned some money. He told me he picked up about $500, but this morning felt terrible and wanted to turn the money in.
What?
Do the right thing.
Man, listen. See, again, this is why something like this would never happen to me. Because I'm like, nah, man. This is supposed to happen. This is a blessing for me. Like, the Lord knew what I needed at this time, and he made a way. When there was no way, he made a way. You know what I'm saying? Y'all ain't gonna receive no blessings. Y'all think y'all doing the right thing right now. Y'all think y'all doing the right thing right now? I don't think y'all doing the right thing. I think y'all was some fool ass niggas turning that goddamn money in when that money was just like given to y'all in that way. And how you gonna talk theft by taking? Nigga, I found this. That's what it was. I found it. If, like, shit, you know how many times motherfuckers, like, drop a 20 on the ground and somebody just finds it? You think that nigga getting the 20 back? Come on, man. Be
Turn
for real.
The money. I mean, we certainly understand, you know, the temptation of that. You see the money falling from the sky.
But like Rendell Lewis said.
Oh, man, look at this.
You know, it belonged to someone. You can't really keep it.
Reporting from.
They money was FDIC insured. Yeah, that's it. That's it. It was FDIC insured. They gonna get their money back. Oh, man.
From DeKalb County, Dave Huddleston, Channel 2 Action News.
All right. So, yeah, that happened in these Blue Blaze streets, man. That happened in these Blue Blaze streets. Yeah, man. So, what else happened in Blue Blazes, man? Let's go ahead and look at some more stuff. Yo, man. So, apparently... there's another goddamn ice cream bandit on the loose. And this time, well, not necessarily on the loose. But this time, see, last week when we talked about this, we found out that girl was young as shit. And she was probably egged on by a nigga that's her boyfriend is way too old for her. They said he was an adult and she was over 16. I'm wondering why in the fuck that isn't more of a story. But yeah, man, so apparently people have been copycatting the whole lick the ice cream in the cart, you know, and put it back on the shelf shit. People been doing that. But this nigga here has no motherfucking excuse whatsoever. We got this man, Lanice Martin, out of, he's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 36 years old, and he out here licking goddamn ice cream in the damn carton and putting it back in the shelf and act like he was surprised that he got in trouble.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
So we gonna watch
in jail
it?
For his viral video.
Oh, shit, there's video with this here, too. Goddamn. So we got videos all over the place tonight here on the Spam Report podcast. Let's go ahead and pull this video up. So let's watch these news people talk this shit. So I ain't got to read it. That's really what we doing right now. That's really what we doing. I ain't got to read it. So there we go. Check this out.
Showing him licking ice cream and putting it back inside a grocery store's freezer.
Lanice Martin III sat down with Fox 44's Crystal Whitman, and he says despite his arrest, he's still screaming for his Bluebell ice cream.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Well, Martin says he shouldn't have been arrested in Assumption Parish.
That nigga look high as shit in his damn mugshot. He look high as fuck even there.
perish based solely off the public's assumptions. Now, Lennis Martin III says video of himself licking the top of the Bluebell ice cream tub, moving his finger around the top and licking it again was not what it appeared to be. Now, after being released from jail in Assumption Parish, he told us that he bought ice cream from Big B's supermarket and recorded the video, which was just a prank. Martin says his actions shouldn't have landed him behind bars with murderers and real criminals.
Oh, yes, it did, nigga. Yes, it did. So check this out, man. You too old for this shit. Bottom line, you 36 motherfucking years old. You too old for this shit. I would expect this sort of dumb shit from a kid. For your grown old ass to be in the motherfucking store licking ice cream, putting your finger in it, putting it back up on the shelf, recording yourself doing it, and then posting it to social media, clout chasing, is sad as fuck. And it's a whole lot of people out here. I know we like there's this thing where there's this attitude, you know, everybody's going to have their 15 minutes of fame. It's just the reaches that people are making to get those 15 minutes of fame. You are endangering other people, even though you might not necessarily think that what you're doing is dangerous, right? But then you like, all this does is make someone feel like I got to up the ante. You know what I'm saying? Maybe if I sprinkle a little crack on it or something, or maybe if I like rub my ass on it or something, like it kind of ups the ante where like, yo, you saw how much attention that first video got. And then all of a sudden people start copycatting it. Everybody ain't going to get caught. Somebody might just do this now that they've seen this done on social media. Everybody's getting all this attention. Somebody may have the idea like, hey, maybe I can get away with doing this, just not videotaping myself to do it and getting all this fucking media attention. I could go ahead and tamper with some goddamn ice cream and fuck somebody up in real, like for real. All I gotta do is not record myself doing it. And you worried about, well, I shouldn't be going to jail with murderers and rapists. Meanwhile, I'm out here tampering with food. Come on, bro. You too old. You shouldn't have been doing this shit. Let me go ahead and finish this video out. Let me see what he's talking about.
I didn't even see how to put that together. It's saying I took it out there, licked it, and put it back. And none of that happened on the video. You never saw me take it out there, or you never saw me put it back. You know what I'm saying? When the video came on, it was in my hand. When the video went off, I was leaning to put it back, but you never saw me actually put it back.
Oh, nigga.
Now, according to employees of Big B's, Martin's actions did cause them to destroy 48 half tubs of the ice cream for the safety of the public. And they did say he was a loyal customer who visited the store almost daily. And we've reached out to the local media relations department for Bluebell, and they say no one was available to respond to our request. For Fox 44 News, I'm Crystal Whitman.
All right, Crystal Whitman, but man, thank you for that report. But yo, man, like this is just fucking dumb, man. Like, stop doing this shit. This clout chasing ass, yo, man, let me be the next nigga to do this viral challenge, nigga. Like, I don't even, was it really a challenge, though? Like, or did nigga just, like, all of a sudden just make it into one? Like, was it really a challenge? You know what I mean? Because, like, it just seemed as though, like, people saw something good popular on social media, and everybody wanted to, like, just kind of jump on that bandwagon. Sort of like, you know, people going to jump on that goddamn, you know, Los Angeles Clippers bandwagon. But y'all know what I mean. You know, people want to jump on these bandwagons and get their little 15 minutes. But this ain't the way, man. This is not the motherfucking way. That's in Blue Blazes. Another thing that's in Blue Blazes, man. I named the episode after this particular incident at first, and then the R. Kelly shit happened, and I had to change everything up. But apparently, man, this motherfucker was hiding out from the police. And while he was hiding out from the police, he got nervous, couldn't hold his bowels, and not his bowels, not couldn't hold his bowels, and gave up his location because he farted and the police found this dumb ass.
Well, I'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Oh, man, so we're going to read this story here. This comes out of, where does it come out of? Come on, load up, baby. Load on up. I got it. Come on, man. This thing is going slizzo. All right, we're going to read this story here. This comes out of, 7 on your side, huh? KATV.com. It says, police in Liberty, Missouri were able to sniff out a hiding suspect after the authorities said the suspect passed gas so loudly it gave away, their hiding spot. In the Facebook post, Clay County, Missouri authorities say police were looking for a person who had a felony warrant out for his arrest. That's when they say the suspect passed gas, leading police right to the suspected culprit. Clay County authorities say the suspect was wanted for possession of a controlled substance. The person was arrested over the weekend on a Clay County warrant for possession of a controlled substance. The Clay County, Missouri Sheriff's Department said, "We got to give props to Liberty PD for using their senses to sniff him out." This nigga farted his way out. My man farted, man, and blew up the spot, literally, man. He literally blew up the spot. He could not. His nerves, somebody said his nerves was bad. Probably so, man. But I don't know if I've ever been so fucking nervous where I was like, I couldn't hold the shit, and I was like letting out an explosive-ass fart to where the police is going to find me. But also, I ain't never been, like, you know, possession of a controlled substance that I had the police looking for me. So, yeah, that might be the thing, too. But, yeah, man, that is in Blue Blazes. Another story, man, that's in Blue Blazes, and I saw this kind of trending a little bit over the course of the week, was this story that came out of here in Detroit, man. Came right out of here in Detroit. And apparently, there was a music festival called the Afro Futures Fest or something like that, I believe it is. And they were making white people pay double the price of what black people was paying to attend this goddamn festival. And then all they got all this media attention, and it became a...
Now, you got too much dip on your chip.
Let's go ahead and look at this story here. This comes out of, let's see, Channel 4 here in Detroit. Let me pull this video up so you guys can watch this right along with your boy. Here we go.
Let's get to that concert controversy. When you're promoting an event, publicity is usually a pretty good thing.
Yeah, but Detroit's Afro Future Fest is getting national attention for a reason the organizers say they never intended. Take a look at the pricing people encountered when trying to buy tickets online. One price for people of color and a higher one for non-people of color. As Larry Spruill explains, this has now changed, but the organizers still feel their intentions were good.
Adrian Newmy and Francesca Lamar really don't have time for much the last couple of days. They are the concert planners for a two-a-day festival called Afro Future Fest.
We have Milfi performing. We have Black Boy Shine, who will be hosting and DJing as well. We have Charity. We have Curtis Roach.
It's a concert that benefits the organization Afro Future Youth,
which gives black teens in Detroit the space and the tools to build a more equitable future for all aspects of black lives.
But their schedules have been on overload, not really for planning the concert, but because of the ticket prices on Eventbrite. You can see here where it advertises two different ticket prices, one for POC or person of color, and another price for non-POC or non-person of color. This is now getting nationwide attention, but they tell me there's a reason why.
And so we're not up.
Hold on.
Event so, publicities.
You- oh, snap. How the hell I end up way back here? Okay. So, interestingly enough, one of the things I want to point out, Where's My 40 Acres? Shout out to Where's My 40 Acres, because I heard this story about this story from them before it ever reached anything, even on the local media here. So shout out to Where's My 40 Acres for like kind of like bringing this to my attention or whatever. Like, you know, the whole crew over there. Because I had never heard it. The Afro Future Fest. I've never heard of any of these people that they talking about going to be performing at this festival. Any of this stuff. And they got attention in the worst possible motherfucking way. And it's for this right here.
We need discount.
Numi says there is some controversy behind their methods, but overall people are supporting them. But I did find out local rapper Tiny Jag, who's also biracial, did drop out of the lineup. I asked her why. She sent me this statement. It says in part, "Utilizing a ticket structure that alienates any race is simply unaligned with my views. I know we can make necessary strides in equity and agency for blacks without compromising our integrity." And so I did also talk to the event planners about her dropping out. They tell me that they respect her.
All right. So another thing that I need to say, too, is like this act, this artist who decided to pull out of this particular festival. I know she said like her grandmother, like she's biracial. She said her grandmother is an older white lady. She would have been really hurt if her grandmother would have been taxed double to come to this event to watch her perform and everything. And I know a lot of people were giving this girl shit like, yo, this is that tragic mulatto shit and everything. I don't know if I really vibe with that shit either, though. Like, I get it, like on a sense of, yo, man, like if I'm biracial and I do, and I got love for both sides of my family, that like my grandmother might not necessarily be a racist piece of shit, You know what I'm saying? Like, why should my grandmother suffer because, or why should my grandmother be out here paying double to come watch me of all people? Like, why would I like kind of stick behind that? I didn't understand the backlash that she was getting. As far as the price structure, whether or not it was racist or not, I don't know if like black people have a structural, like, it was misinformed. It was misguided. To say that we need discount on some shit that we already are creating for ourselves, I don't know if Otter went that route. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not as if we don't have means. You know what I mean? I get that there's, you know, there's a lot of talk around, you know, reparations and whether or not you know, black people should get reparations and everything. And maybe they were even thinking that this was a form of reparations. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe this is a way for us to, you know, maybe this is a way for us to kind of have some level of recompense, some level of equity, some level of reversing the table, so to speak, where we're treating our people a little bit better than y'all used to treat us, that sort of thing. But at the same time, a company like Eventbrite could be open to a lawsuit. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to be selling tickets this way, and like now all of a sudden, truth be told, a company like Eventbrite will be getting hit with the lawsuits much more than these young ladies will, because people know Eventbrite is the name that people know and they got the money. Y'all don't. Y'all probably had to raise funds to get this thing going, to get this thing lifted off the ground, and Eventbrite got money. Y'all had to use them to, you know, to kind of distribute the tickets for y'all. So I'm just saying, this might not have been the necessarily the best way to go about it. I'm just saying, they eventually like took their tickets off of Eventbrite. I'm not even sure how you enforce that. Like, how does a white person, like, say a white person just like bought a non-person of color ticket, what you gonna do? Does it show on the ticket that they say non-person of color? You gonna reject them as soon as they walk up to the festival? You know what I mean? Like, they go up there like, I paid for the $12. You got all these, the funny thing is, you got all these $12 tickets. You know what I'm saying? And everybody there is like, white, what you gonna do? You gonna turn everybody away? Like, that's just the crazy, it's just crazy, man. So, yeah, that's in Blue Blazes, man. And that has been Blue Blazes.
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here? Did this nigga just say Blue Blazes?
All right, so now that we're out of Blue Blazes, y'all know what time it is. That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. All right, that's enough of that shit. But in Blue, not Blue Blazes. Proud to be an American. Our first story is Mitch McConnell claims that he and Barack Obama are similar in the fact that they are both descendants of slave owners. So before we do that, we gotta.
What?
Yeah. So let's go ahead and let's pull this video up of Mitch McConnell trying to liken himself to Barack Obama when it comes to him being the descendant of slave owners. So here we go.
Were you aware that your great-great-grandfathers were slave owners in Alabama before the Civil War? And has that revelation caused you to change your position on reparations?
You know, I find myself once again in the same position as President Obama. We both...
That little cheesy-ass smirk he had on his face when he said that, though, I find myself in the same position as President Barack Obama. Like, this turtleneck motherfucker.
Opposed reparations, and we both are the descendants of slaveholders.
All right, so what he did here is he said that we both oppose reparations, and we both oppose, and we're both the descendants of slave owners, right? So it's interesting how Mitch McConnell tried to frame this as though him and Barack Obama being the descendants of slave owners are on equal footing when it comes to this particular issue. And one of the things that you kind of like look at is the fact that although Barack Obama was the descendant of slave owners. I think if you looked at a lot of black people's, if you looked at the lineage of a lot of black people in America, some of us are also the descendants of slave owners, but not in the same way that Mitch McConnell would be the descendant of a slave owner. Many slaves were raped during the time of slavery. There were many children born of those rapes during the time of slavery. I doubt very seriously that Mitch McConnell's great-great-grandfathers and on both sides of his family I doubt very seriously that his ancestors were of the slave variety, so to speak. I think those relationships may have been consensual. Now, I'm speculating, but of course, judging by the relationship between black and white people in slavery, I think that's a pretty safe assumption. The audacity of this asshole to try to equate himself with Barack Obama, who walked around as although he had a white mama, you couldn't tell by the looks of him. And this is something that I think is very interesting, is that he would try to equate himself with Barack Obama in that way, right? The other thing that I think is very interesting in why he tried to frame it this way, he tried to say that Barack Obama was against reparations. And one of the things about Barack Obama's record when it came to reparations, I think Barack Obama had his mind, right? And I'm gonna pull up an article where we kind of talk about what Barack Obama's official position was when it came to reparations. But I think Obama was about this mind. I think when Obama was talking about reparations and whether or not it was a feasible thing for black people in America to get reparations, I think he thought on much the same way that how black people thought, how feasible would it be to have an actual black president happen, right? I think Barack Obama was looking at it as though, yo, let's be realistic. I don't think this is an actual thing that can happen. And so since I don't believe this is an actual thing that can happen, how about we do some other things that can actually have tangible results and tangible benefits for people of color, black people in America? Because I don't believe that this country, although I believe in this country, I don't believe in this country enough, as aspirational as I am. I don't believe in this country enough that reparations will be a thing that America is willing to do for African Americans, right? And so one of the things that he said, as a matter of fact, I'm going to pull this article up. It says, while campaigning it for the 2008 election, Obama shared his views on the issue in an NAACP questionnaire. He said, I fear that reparations would be an excuse for some to say that we've paid our debt and to avoid the much harder work of enforcing our anti-discrimination views in employment and housing, the much harder work of making sure that our schools are not separate and unequal, the much harder work of providing job training programs and rehabilitating young men coming out of prison every year, and the much harder work of lifting 37 million Americans of all races out of poverty. These challenges will not go away with reparations. So while I applaud and agree with the underlying sentiment of recognizing the continued legacy of slavery, I would never prefer to focus on the issues that we will that will directly address these problems and build a consensus to do just that. It said, Obama as a candidate rejected reparations by arguing the political will did not exist to provide them and that he favored pursuing more practical policy goals. He said so in August 2008. As I have said in the past, and I will repeat again, that the best reparations we can provide are good schools in the inner city and jobs for people who are unemployed. And you know, I think that strategies that invest in lifting people out of the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow, but that have broad applicability and allow us to build coalitions to actually get these things done, that I think is the best strategy. So again, Barack Obama's position was more so, he didn't believe that like this was actually going to be a thing. So since we can't do this, since this might not necessarily be feasible for America at this time, how about we address the things that we actually can do right now? So for Mitch McConnell to say that, well, shit, I'm just like Barack Obama. I'm against reparations. He against reparations. He was not. I'm a descendant of slaveholders. He's a descendant of slaveholders. And as I said before, both of those things could be true, that you were a descendant of slave owners and Barack Obama was a descendant of slave owners. However, The relationship between your descendancy of slaves or slave owners and his are entirely different. And the legacy that they left behind them is entirely different. And I'm sure if Barack Obama was to walk in segregated Alabama in 1955 and you were to walk in segregated Alabama in 1955, your experiences would be extremely different. So fuck Mitch McConnell. And this is the reason why this shit isn't proud to be an American. Also, another story here in Proud to Be an American was apparently some white man decided that he was going to kill a kid over rap music because he said he feared for his life because of it. Let's read this story here. This comes out of Root.com. It says Arizona law enforcement officials arrested a man who allegedly killed an innocent teenager in a brutal stabbing early Thursday morning. Although the teen didn't know the suspect or apparently do anything up to his alleged killer, authorities say the man committed the fatal act simply because he felt threatened by the music the teen was playing. Hold on just a second here. Here we go. All right, it says on Thursday, police in Peoria, Arizona charged 27-year-old Michael Paul Adams with the first-degree premeditated murder of 17-year-old Elijah Alameen. According to the Arizona Republic's review of the court documents, Adams allegedly slit the boy's throat and stabbed him with a pocket knife at a Peoria Circle K gas station. Superior Court records say that Adams told investigators that he felt threatened by the hip-hop music the teen was playing, not the teenager himself, explaining that people who play rap music are a threat to him and his community. Adams reportedly said he was being proactive, not reactive, because the musical genre makes him feel unsafe after rap music listeners attacked him in the past. Alameen had just finished working his shift at Subway at 11:30 p.m., visiting his girlfriend before heading to the Circle K around 1:42 a.m. Surveillance footage shows the convenience store shows Alameen walking into the store, followed by Adams a few seconds later, reports the Republic. After Adam allegedly stabbed a teenager, Alameen ran out of the store where he collapsed near the gas tanks. He was transported to a nearby hospital and pronounced dead around 2:05 a.m. on Thursday. Authorities say after a brief search, the cops claimed they found Adams covered in blood and reportedly admitting he was involved in the heinous slaying. Adams, whose criminal history includes theft, disorderly conduct, assault with a weapon, and assault on a corrections officer, was released from prison on Tuesday. Adams' attorney says that he had no access to mental health. Man, fuck you! Says he had no access to mental health services after he was released through a statement from Arizona Department of Corrections spokesman. Says that Adams was not designated seriously mentally ill. Fuck you. Fuck his lawyer. Fuck his lawyer, man. Real talk. Like, I'm real sick and tired of white people being able to try to use mental illness for why they do the fuck shit that they do. No, this is how you are. This is how you are. This is how you think. And trying to use mental health as a reason why he did this is fucked up. It's a disservice to anybody who's actually dealing with real mental health issues. Racism. Racism is something you learn. It is not a mental health defect. It's something you learn. It's something you cultivate. It's something you hone on to. It's something you legitimize. So the fact that this dude did this, he killed him over the fucking music, man. Over the fucking music. I really don't have anything else after that, man. Real talk. I don't have nothing. That's in Proud to Be an American, man. Another story in Proud to Be an American. So, I don't know if this is comic relief, and maybe it's much needed comic relief, but apparently there were some teens in Maryland who did some racist shit. They sprayed some graffiti, some racist graffiti all over their school. And, the Wi-Fi in their school helped to identify all four of these little dumb motherfuckers.
Oh, man. Hey.
And do we have video? I believe we do. We do have video. So let me go ahead and pull this up so you guys can watch right along with your boy. Here we go. Uh-oh. Let's start that back.
Authorities identified the four suspects who covered Glen Elg High School in offensive graffiti last summer. The Washington Post reports the suspects' cell phones automatically connected to the school Wi-Fi under their student IDs. Seth Taylor, Tyler Curtis, Joshua Schaefer, and Matthew Lipp were then arrested. The team spray-painted racist, homophobic, and anti-Semitic graffiti on the school grounds. They claim the incident was just a prank.
Yeah, man. Funny how you can like view your racism as just like, ah, oh, we just fucking around, you know, we didn't really mean anything by it, you know, like, yeah, of all the things to do a senior prank about, you decided to do that. There was I did read the Washington Post article. It's a very long article, it's a very detailed article, but it's a very like good article, and I would implore anybody who's interested in the story to kind of read up on it themselves, because it kind of talks about well, two of the kids who were involved in this particular story, they talked about what led up to it. A couple of them are not speaking to the press. They say that because they were being, they are actually arguing for their free speech, right? So they go and vandalize a fucking school building with racist graffiti, and then they say that their free speech is being trampled upon because they put their racist graffiti on school property, right? And then on top of that, they actually believe that what they did, although they say they don't believe in the things that they wrote, and that they are not racist because of what they did, right? Many of them said that they didn't necessarily know the history behind the symbols that they were scrawling all over the school. Like, you saw KKK all over the school. You saw Nazi swastikas all over the school. Many of them, you know, a few of them said that they did not know the history behind that, why it was so terrible for them to put those up. And I don't necessarily buy that shit. You know that it was going to draw some attention. You know, especially in this age of social media and this age of like us being constantly connected with our phones, what things will draw attention, what things will bring out the biggest reactions of folks. I doubt very seriously that these teens had absolutely no clue what the fuck they were doing. I don't buy it. But yeah, man, it is a Washington Post article, and I really do. I would implore everybody who's listening to my voice right now to go read that article. But yeah, man, these kids were found out. They did this deed. They covered up their faces, man. They put their t-shirts around their face. They painted over 100 different spots, and they thought they were being smart and clever, and yet they didn't know that their phones would be the downfall of all four of them. As soon as they got on campus, their phones connected to the Wi-Fi, and they knew exactly who it was who did that. That's crazy how much these kids don't know that their phones are telling on them, or better yet, how much they like willingly tell on themselves with their phones. But yeah, man, that has been that's in Proud to Be an American. But that is not it. We got one more story here in Proud to Be an American, man, and that is there's a wedding here in Michigan, man, on the west side of the state, man, where they, you know, it's a little bit different. It's not exactly like, you know, being here in Southeast Michigan, man. It's a little bit different over there on the west side of the state. But apparently there's a couple on, I believe it was Kalamazoo. It might've been Kalamazoo, where they are in love with Trump so much so that they decided that they were going to have their wedding themed with Donald Trump's MAGA all over their shit. It was a MAGA wedding, y'all. So we go ahead, let's pull this story up. This comes out of WGN TV. It's in Kent County, Michigan. Yeah, and it was in Kalamazoo. I was right. So let me pull this up so you guys can watch with your boy. Here we go. Let's watch what WGN has to say about this particular story. Shit, it looked like America threw up all over my wedding, and I'm not sorry. Check this out, y'all.
All the wedding party had the Make America Great Again hats.
Not the typical uniform for bridesmaids and groomsmen, but Jeff and Audra Johnson's pride in the president isn't something they want overlooked, even on their wedding day.
It looked like America threw up all over my wedding.
and I'm not sorry.
Audra Johnson says as a little girl, she never thought about what her wedding would be like. And as an adult, she was never particularly political. That is, until Donald Trump came on the scene.
When he came out and said, you know, it's okay to love your country. It's okay to put the people in your country first. It's okay to maybe not be politically correct.
It's okay to be racist. It's okay to be like a bitch to, you know, immigrants. It's okay to be a bitch to people who are seeking asylum. Like, it's okay to be like, you know, so xenophobic. Like, I like that.
So they use their wedding to celebrate their love for one another and President Trump.
I really feel like because we are such a mixed family, you know, he's African American.
Wait, what? Hold on. What? She said he's African American.
He's African American. I'm Filipino.
Do y'all, do that dude look like he black? Could y'all tell? Do y'all see any black people in this picture? Can y'all tell? She said she was Filipino. Can y'all tell?
I thought it was really important to show people that the stereotype doesn't, you know, the whole Trump supporters are racist, stuff like that. We both thought it was really important to show that that's wrong.
Nope.
Okay, so I want to say this, okay? I've got a family member, and I haven't seen my cousin in quite some time. I've got a family member. She's a Trump supporter. She's half black. She's half Filipino. She lives in Iowa. She's married to a white man. And she's a Trump supporter. And for the life of me, I can't understand why. But again, like I said, I haven't seen my cousin in like years. We was probably like teenagers the last time we saw each other. So I don't know what my cousin's life experiences have been from the time we were teenagers to now. I don't know what led my cousin to go like to live in Iowa, from Chicago. My cousin ran for like state representative in Iowa. I've seen her post pictures on her Instagram and on her Facebook of her at Republican events. I've seen her go to go see Donald Trump as he visits Iowa, stuff like that. Like, I've seen this stuff, and I for the life of me, I cannot fucking understand why. Like, what the fuck is my cousin thinking about? But the fact that, like, she said that, I'm Filipino, my husband's black, and neither one of them, you couldn't tell. If you looked at these folks, and for those of you who are watching the video, like, if you looked at these folks, you really couldn't tell. Both of them look white to me. And she said that this is like, it's as though the idea that Trump is racist is bullshit simply because they particularly support this, you know, they support it. And I'm going to just say this, man, like, just because there's some of you of color who decided that y'all were going to be able to look over all this other shit that he's doing doesn't make what he's doing not racist. Just because you decided to look over it, or just because you decide that doesn't apply to you, that you're that special snowflake that it doesn't apply to. The shit exists. It exists in a major way. And it's just weird, like, how they try to make this rationalization amongst themselves to make them feel like, you know, well, you know, he's not, I support him, so he can't be talking about me. Yeah, because he's anybody who's willing to throw support behind a grifter, they don't give a fuck who it is. They just want the support so it puts them in a position to do whatever the fuck it is that they wanted to do.
No details spared, down to the red, white, and blue flower arrangements and manicures, to the custom Make America Great Again reception dress designed by Andre Soriano, a dressmaker
that
famous
don't look
for his
black
Trump
to me,
gowns.
Man.
It's actually made out of a MAGA flag.
On each reception table, guests could sign the petition for an anti-abortion heartbeat bill. But among the guests, there were a few...
Also, why would you politicize your wedding in that way? Right? Like, why would you, like, on the center, a centerpiece for everybody at your wedding is like a petition to end abortion. Really? Really?
Important faces missing. There were a few important faces missing.
Unfortunately, my now husband, his father refused to come. He sent us a text message. It said, as long as you support that racist in the White House, I won't be attending your wedding.
Shout out to his daddy. Shout out to his daddy. Like, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you, boy. But this shit right here, this ain't it. This ain't it.
Which is sad, but we did have a...
It ain't sad. It's fucking the truth. It's the truth, whether you want to acknowledge it or not.
A lot of people that loved us and showed up.
Audra says even her brother has disowned her for her strong belief.
So his daddy and your brother both was like, nah, I can't fuck with y'all with this shit right here.
I think when it's your family, like anybody else can call me anything they want and I don't care. But when it's your family, it really gets to you because it's like, wait a minute, I'm still the same person I was 3 years ago before I started supporting Trump.
Oh, so you were bumper stickers. Trump 2020, results, not resistance. Armed infidel, which is also a shot at, like, you know, Muslim Americans. MAGA with the they got the Punisher emblem under MAGA. Interesting how they like try to adopt these symbols. Like, I know the police also try to adopt the Punisher symbol, and the Punisher is a fucking vigilante. Right? The police have actually tried to use the Punisher symbol, put that American flag with the blue streak down the middle, and they put those on police cars and shit, and the Punisher is a fucking vigilante. They are not the same things. God.
Despite the dirty looks about her bumper stickers or comments from people on the internet, Audra says she's keeping her chin up.
I kind of just live off of that because, you know, if you're, at least if they're talking about it, you're at least getting them to think about it.
Grand Rapids, Atrel Nishar, Fox.
Yeah, those people are dumb. That's just stupid. But again, it's proud to be an American. That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the U.S. All right, that's enough of that shit. But it's time for us to get on up out of here, man. But before we do, y'all know what time it is.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And of course, before we leave out of here, we got our ass hat of the week. And this week, our ass hat is none other than Bamarin Nicole Smith, man. Now, I know you guys don't know who the fuck Bamarin Nicole Smith is at all. I mean, I didn't know who the fuck this was until I heard about the story, too. But we were talking about those people who were going about the business of going to get Bluebell ice cream, opening it up, licking it, and then putting it back in the damn freezer, right? Well, Bamarin Nicole Smith decided that they were going to take some mouthwash, open it up, gargle it, and spit it back in the bottle, and then put it back on the shelf. We're going to read the story here. This comes out of DailyMail.com. It says a video showing a Walmart shopper gargling mouthwash before spitting it back in the bottle and returning it to the shelf has gone viral for all the wrong reasons. In a clip released Wednesday, Bamarin Nicole Smith is seen walking into the frame declaring, "Girl, it has been one musty fucking morning." Smith then opens a bottle of the blue stuff, takes a swig of Listerine, and dumps the contents back onto the counter. The video continues with Smith commenting, nice and minty and fresh, before waving thank you guys and strutting down the aisle. By Friday, I'm not clicking that fucking video, fuck them. By Friday, the clip caption, "You bitches with no oral hygiene could take a hint," had received 15.6 million views. Some viewers suggested it was staged and Smith didn't appear to break the seal on the bottle. It's unclear whether Smith later removed and paid for the item, but a later tweet joke later, alongside a video running in platform shoes, Walmart's loss prevention chasing me out like, it caused people on forums such as Reddit to complain that the act is a crime, and call for Smith's punishment. A social media user commented, another one for prison. Hope you have fun with your new inmate friends. To which Smith replied, I looked in the cell next to me, and it's the ice cream girl. It appeared to be by the same people behind the craze of licking ice cream before putting it back into the freezer at grocery stores. A friend of Smith's, a YouTuber named Lars, claimed on Twitter that Wednesday, "I started the trend of opening products without buying them." He appeared in a video that showed him grabbing ice cream from a tub with his hands and scooping it directly into his mouth before putting it back on the shelf. This week, a woman was seen on camera participating in the act at Walmart. So, here's the thing. Clout chasing. Stop. 15.6 million views of this shit. And that's really all they want. That's really all they want. Like, yo, you watched it, so I got what I want. And maybe they get what they want by me talking about this shit right now. But you know what? I have no qualms whatsoever about silly motherfuckers like this going to jail behind this dumb shit. I really don't have any qualms whatsoever about it. Lock the asses up. Lock all of them up. This is dumb. And it can lead to more dangerous shit. Maybe it's like the older nigga in me, man. I'm 39 years old or whatever, and I'm just like, I don't have the patience for this shit no more or whatever. I don't know. But yo, man, this is just stupid. This is dumb. And this is why Bammer and Nicole Smith is the ass out of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ. Our champ this week here at the Spin Report Podcast is none other than Markia Nelson, man. I know y'all don't know who the fuck Markia Nelson is. I didn't know either. But yo, man, she going out in the Scammers Hall of Fame because Markia Nelson was a manager at Dunkin' Donuts. And not only was she a manager at Dunkin' Donuts, she was an employee because she hired herself as an employee and was getting all the checks. Until they arrested a silly ass man.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of KLFY.com. It says a Pinellas County Dunkin' Donuts manager was arrested for grand theft this week after police say she hired a fake employee to pocket more money for herself. Pinellas Park police arrested 29-year-old Markia Nelson Monday morning. An arrest report identifies Nelson as a store manager at the Dunkin' on Omerton Road near 40th Street near Largo. According to the arrest report, Nelson hired a fictitious person on May 15, 2019. From May 16 through July 6, police say Nelson punched in and punched out as the fake employee, logging a total of 235 hours. The arrest report says the fake employee earned $8.65 an hour. The fake employee earned a total of $1,610.84. God damn, that's it. Okay. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. From May to July, that's all they got. Oh. Police say Nelson direct deposited that money into her own account. She later admitted to police that she did it and used the money for life expenses. The arrest report says, Nelson was charged with grand theft and was booked into the Pinellas County Jail. Online records show that she has since been released. Oh man. So, the reason why I decided to name this person Champ of the Week this week was because I really did just admire the ingenuity, right? Like, yo, I'm going to hire myself as an employee, and I'm going to get paid double, right? It was just, like, the ingenuity. Like, the crime itself was like, yeah, that's some fuck shit. But, like, the crime, I'm like, yo, man, like, I never would have thought to do no dumb shit. Like, I never would have thought to do no shit like that myself, right? But the fact that over the course of over a month and a half, that all they were able to earn was $1,610.84 is like, yo, that ain't no money. And I don't mean to demean anybody who's working like $8.65 an hour. They're trying their best to make ends meet and earn it. That is not what I'm saying. Do not get it fucked up. Because I too worked minimum wage, right? It takes me back to when I was, I used to work at Little Caesars, man. And I'll never forget this. I was getting paid $6 an hour. My daughter was young. It was me, my daughter, and my daughter's mom at the time. We were all living together. And I, like I said, I was getting paid $6 an hour. And at the end of the night, I would take food home, you know, because there was food that we would be throwing out. Right? Lil C's would be throwing food out. Like, we'd have hot and readies and shit that we had made that night. And, you know, we were getting ready to close up. The food was getting ready to go. We're like, all right, we're going to end up tossing this shit. And instead of tossing the food, I would take some home. Right? And I'll never forget this. I remember I came back to work one day, and it was a whole new crew working in the store. And they were like, yo, Span, if you want to come back to work, you got to go downtown. You got to go downtown to talk to some people. So I go downtown, I talk to some people, and the first thing these motherfuckers in loss prevention said to me was like, how much loss have you caused Little Caesars? And I was like, well, shit, I don't know. I mean, I would take food home or whatever, but mostly it was food that we would be tossing at the end of the night. Like, you already counting it as a loss. It's going out. And he asked me, he said, the dude told me, he was like, yo, you're getting paid $6 an hour. He like, well, we pay you a salary. And I said, yo, you pay me $6 an hour. In 2 weeks, I was earning $300. In 2 weeks. That's all the money that I would. At the time, that was a lot of money for your man Span. Like, it was like, yo, if I work 30 hours this week and 30 hours next week, I can get $300. Like, in the position that I'm in now, I'm like, man, that ain't shit. But again, that was the position that I was in at the time. So I'm not saying that I agree with the fact that she went through some felonious shit to get this extra money. I will say that I understand, because I've been in that position to where I was working a job, making minimum wage, having a hard time making ends meet. And, you know, the idea that that's something that you would think to do to try to, like, you know, have some level of a come up. Some level of, I don't know, some level of like surviving beyond just barely. Yeah, man, it's part of the reason why I named her Champ of the Week this week. I could relate. Now, I didn't do no shit like this here, but I will say that I could relate. So yeah, that's the show. That has been episode 255 of the Span Report podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We will be back next Saturday, because that's what it is. Next Saturday is when the Span Report, Saturday nights are the Span Report podcast nights. So that's what we're going to do. Not nights. Nah, we're not doing nights. Saturday afternoons, early morning afternoons, something like that. Yeah, man, it's time for me to get on up out of here. I've been running my mouth for quite some time. But of course, before we go, I got to remind you guys how to get in touch with your man Span here at the Span Report podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. We'll replay those messages here live on the show and respond in kind. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave us those emails, and of course, we will read those emails here live on the show and respond to you guys here as well. Follow your man Span on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your man throughout the week. Also, hit us up on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio, man. Those 5-star reviews, man. We really do appreciate everybody who leaves those 5-star reviews. Hit us up with those. We'll read those reviews here live on the show and respond to you here as well. Also, follow us on, become a TSRPN patron on Patreon, man. We really do appreciate everybody who does that. It is one way to get us to get this show off of Facebook, but also it's one way to, it's one way to show support, man, in a very, very real way. And we really do appreciate everybody who does that. Thank you so much for your contributions to the Span Report Podcast Network, man. Real talk. And also, go to our website at www.thespanreport.com. You can go there. You can watch replays of the show. You can vote in the polls. You can leave comments there. You can donate to the show, not through just the Patreon, but through our PayPal as well. You can also go there and get yourself some merch, man. You can get a t-shirt or a coffee mug or whatever you like out of our Span Report Podcast Network store. Just go to www.thespanreport.com. Hit take me to the store and boom, there you go. But that is it. This has been episode 255 of the Span Report podcast, and I will talk to you guys again soon. But until next time, fam, peace.